Jesus' name this evening. I invite you to turn to 1 Kings chapter 12. AI or elders, I don't know what went through your mind when you saw this subject. Some of us are maybe a little more familiar with AI. I was somewhat familiar, but I didn't feel familiar enough to preach on the subject without searching into it some more. AI is artificial intelligence. AI technology is evolving, that is replacing the need for human input on a lot of fronts. And we're going to eventually need to make a decision. Am I going to ask AI, or am I going to ask someone older than me that may have experienced what I'm looking for the answer for already? And how do we know which to ask? Where does efficiency fit into it all? Who considers themselves an elder? Who is an elder? Tonight, I would like to believe that if I asked for a raise of hands, the true elders would probably be a little slow to put their hand up because we don't feel real old. When I use the term elders tonight, I want to clarify that I'm not thinking about people with gray hair. They're included, yes. But I'm thinking about anyone older than us who has a real-life sense to the issues at hand, that AI technology may not have. Anyone that has driven the road and can advise with the assistance of a rear-view mirror. The married 25-year-old has an incredible amount of wisdom for the person turning 16 that no technology can give them, or not in the same way. One of AI's greatest weaknesses is that it is peer-based. It gathers the prevailing views, the loud, the popular, the recent and present answers, and provides them as answers to our need. Untested opinions is what AI is gathering for the most part. In 1 Kings 12, King Rehoboam decided to ask wisdom from two sectors of his kingdom, the ones who had watched Solomon work with people, and his contemporaries. He was challenged right up front. Are you going to make life as difficult for us as your father did? Now, he did not err in seeking multiple perspectives. He erred in what wisdom he trusted in most at the end of the day, as we say. And I want to encourage us tonight that our safest bet is to lean into the advice of people with real-life experience and real-life observation as AI becomes more and more ready to give us answers. I'd like to read 1 Kings 12. And King Rehoboam, starting verse 6, "And King Rehoboam consulted with the old men that stood before Solomon, his father, while he yet lived, and said, How do you advise that I may answer this people? And they spake unto him, saying, If thou wilt be a servant unto this people this day, and wilt serve them, and answer them, and speak good words to them, then they will be thy servants forever. But he forsook the counsel of the old men, which they had given him, and consulted with the young men that were grown up with him, and which stood by him. And he said unto them, What counsel give ye that we may answer this people who have spoken to me, saying, Make the yoke which thy father did put upon us lighter. And the young men that were grown up with him spake unto him, saying, Thus shalt thou speak unto this people that speak unto thee, saying, Thy father made our yoke heavy, but make thou it lighter unto us. Thus shalt thou say unto them, My little finger shall be thicker than thy father's loins. And now, whereas my father did lay you with a heavy yoke, I will add to your yoke. My father hath chastised you with whips, but I will chastise you with scorpions." We see that he got very different advice from the two people groups. The older men spoke from a perspective of knowing firsthand how the human heart responds to kindness and how it breeds loyalty, and they'll bend over backwards for you. They said they'll be your servants forever if you do it that way. But the young men said, "Use fear. Tell them if they think they had it rough, they ain't seen nothing yet." And we know that Rehoboam listened to the young men, and it ended up in a northern tribal revolt and did not end well. AI or elders? Where shall we get our answers to life's complexities? I ask a question, and I'll ask it to you tonight. How many of you drove here in a vehicle that has a paper map or an atlas in? How many of you have a vehicle that has a paper map or an atlas in? All right. When was the last you used it? Some of us maybe still have them, but I doubt they're getting used a whole lot. What happened? Well, this thing called a GPS came along, and we pretty much take whatever Google Maps says is the shortest route at the moment without asking questions. We trust it. We've just learned to trust it. Did that happen overnight? Well, for those of us elders, early on, we were a bit cautious with this technology. And some of us have stories about the cornfield or the graveyard or wherever it took us instead of to our destination. But we accepted the occasional inconvenience as technology developed. And sometimes it was laughably inaccurate, but it was okay. It was developing technology. And AI has some of the same characteristics today. One of my coworkers said, don't you think that AI will always be an inaccurate model that will never really be trusted? I said, no, it will become trusted. That is what I believe. Right now, it's like the early stages of Google Maps. It's being developed. People will put input into it, and they'll iron out wrinkles, and some of the inconvenience that's there now is going to go away as it develops. AI, or artificial intelligence, will, I believe, become the new GPS for life instead of just for roads. It is going to be the go-to place for our answers. What we want to do, how we want to do it, how we should go about it, it's going to be where people go for their answers, just like we go to our GPS when we want to know how to get somewhere. And it will rapidly answer very complex questions before the brother or the sister that we WhatsApped or texted to see if they have an answer, before they even notice the answers in their phone. We can have it from AI. Why mess around with that? I believe that AI is going to fundamentally change the way the world works and interacts moving forward from here. What will we gain? What will we lose? What dangers are there? How does AI differ from a Google search engine? Well, traditional search engines gathered information, then you studied the information, considered its source, and you made your own conclusions for the most part. You could see who the author was. It gave the credits to who wrote it. But AI gathers facts and perspectives and draws conclusions for us and gives us these ready-to-use answers. Very interactive, very helpful, and very palatable information that we can just basically take and run. I had one of my workers hand me a 57-page document that I was supposed to sign to do a job. And I read and read and read and read that for a while, and after a while I decided, you know what, why don't I run this through ChatGPT? And it told me what was in that document in just a very short window of time. Very efficient. And I trusted it for the most part. Now, I had read through a good bit of it myself, but it was very laborsome to read through it. AI works through large and small language models, tools we call bots that are programmed to do specific searches and compilations and narrow down the information, sort of like humans in the past or still do, trained bloodhounds. They train them well, and then they free them to do their work. And I was very surprised to find out that a bloodhound, if it convicts you, that will stand in court. If it says, puts its paws on you and says, you are the one that I was tracking, that will stand in court as testimony against you. An animal. And artificial intelligence is basically doing the same thing. It is being trained by humans, making these bots to go out and go searching for information, and bring it back to you in a way that is trustworthy, in a way that's going to change how the world accepts information. Well, what is AI? How does it work? I'm going to give a very simplistic overview of how it works, a very crude analogy. We all have drawers with stuff in. You have drawers at home, I have drawers at home, but you don't know what's in my drawers. I don't know what's in your drawers. Unless I come to your house and open your drawers and look in and dig around, I don't know what's there. The world through social media has voluntarily opened their drawers. People are posting videos and pictures of their family and their vacations and their conversations and their pets constantly. They are talking about what they believe, where they are. Almost every aspect of life is now becoming an open drawer. People you can see in through social media. Doctors and lawyers and businesses are chatting and publicly sharing information. Churches and mosques and synagogues and Buddhist temples are uploading their creeds and their doctrines. It's just information that is floating out there into cyberspace. The drawers are being opened everywhere. Wisdom is just floating around. For many years, the technology highway was held back by not enough cyber trucks, not enough connectivity, not enough power, not enough energy. But that is changing very, very rapidly. It was restricted by bandwidth and computer prowess. It's been developing since the 40s and 50s. There are engineers still alive talking about how they were trying to get analog technology to do this. But today, the digital platform is taking over, even though it is very power hungry. And that is still one of the challenges they're facing. And that is why TMI is being powered up again, Three Mile Island. And that is why somewhere here in Lancaster County, I don't know exactly where, I'm told the biggest investment in infrastructure and power generation in Lancaster County's history, to the tune of $10 billion, is being put in, a data center, to get this AI engine roaring to life. Everything's coming together. They're getting the bots out there. They just need the computers and they need the electric, and this very rapidly can come together once they get this going. I believe that AI is going to grow exponentially very shortly. The drawers are open already. All we need is the computers to get this information harnessed fast enough. And it's amazing the speed that it is operating already with the limited data that it has. My prediction is we'll see the accuracy and speed of AI grow from here on. Digital processes now can read your pictures and videos, not just your text. That's one of the abilities of AI. Let's use your pet for an example. People are uploading pictures and videos of their pets and their Oreos and their whatever their pets' names are and how their pets act, and they're talking about it. There's chatter out there. And then what happens, Mr. Artist like myself can say, I want a picture of a German Shepherd jumping a fence with the Swiss Alps in the background. I can come up with this bizarre, unique characteristics I want in a picture. And AI has plenty of pictures to look at. It says, oh, here's a good background. Here's a German Shepherd. Here's a fence. Here's a German Shepherd jumping. And it rapidly pulls that together, and in just seconds, it has a picture that I can say I approve or I disapprove, or I like this changed or I like that changed. Because it is at the point, it can now read pictures. You don't have to write on your picture, this is a German Shepherd, so it knows how to file it. It can read that it's a German Shepherd. And you can ask it to write a 500-word essay on the personality of a German Shepherd. And it looks in all these people's drawers what they're saying about their German Shepherds, and it comes up with an amazingly accurate description of a German Shepherd and their personality and whatever you want it to put into the article. All it is computers at work that found a million people's drawers open and took the information and consolidated it down to something that it thought you wanted. There was no human at the other end whatsoever. It was all computers at work. This is why you can keep asking it questions and it won't get tired. It's not somebody at the other end doing it. It's all computers. And it can find things about Mennonites and Amish and our faith and our history in the Bible. And there's all kinds of pictures out there with buggies and horses. I had a gentleman come into my office. He wanted a picture of a horse looking out a barn door. He was an old order or a Dunker Brethren man. And I said, you have a few minutes. And before long, we had a picture of a horse looking out a barn door. And it's incredible what all it can find out there. And it can find it in the time that Grandpa would maybe just be adjusting his hearing aid or asking you to repeat your question. It is so fast. And that is going to be our challenge. Will we have the patience to include elders in our search for truth and right? What the world is concerned about is these bots self-learn off their own algorithms. And because of that, it gives a feeling of intelligence, but it's not intelligence. It is just computers that are doing what the bots are telling them. For instance, I read that the bot that was created to ascertain the difference between the picture of a dog and a wolf. So if I wanted to find a wolf, if I wanted a wolf in my picture, some bot has to go looking at everything out there and say, this is a wolf, this is a wolf, this is a dog, this is a dog. Don't put that on the picture. And they created a very good bot, and it was working very well. And that's a complex task because there's not a lot of difference between some dogs and some wolves. But after a while, they were getting wrong answers and they were perplexed. What is going on? And here what they discovered is the bot that they had made originally to determine between dogs and wolves was leaning toward snow equals a wolf, because it happened that often that snow, that a wolf picture had snow on, that it started believing that's synonymous, and its algorithms started skewing things, and it took human intervention. And the question that is plaguing people is what will happen if that human intervention can't intervene fast enough or can't find the answer to something that AI is doing, especially as it down the road when robots are being run and whatever all else. But I'm not a doomsday crier in that regard. I don't believe we need to fear that necessarily, but it does hold the potential to skew. It does. A little reflection from an elder, thinking about the exponential development that may happen in the future here. I had to just think about the fact when I started out of art school, I started with some artist brushes and some paint, and did pictorial work, and eventually I got into commercial art lettering. But just when I felt I was starting to get competent, I was starting to get good, I remember the feeling when somebody came and told me that there's a computer. If I know that there's a computer out there somewhere that's actually cutting letters out of some sticky stuff and you stick it onto the vehicles, and that maybe paint will be obsolete, painting vehicles will be obsolete. I thought they were crazy at first, but I thought, well, it probably won't hold up, it probably won't last, it can't be as good as paint. But I remember consoling myself with the fact that I'm also a pictorial artist, so if the commercial side goes away, I can always do pictures because they'll never have a computer that will do pictures. And I consoled myself with that. And this is within 40-some years of my lifespan. When I was studying for this, I thought about that, and I thought about the potential of AI, and I went down to the basement, and I talked to my one printer operator down there. I said, how fast can this printer print a picture? He said, about 430 square feet an hour. Now, I just say that to let you know that that is what happened in my lifetime, and it is mind-boggling to me as I think of what the potential of AI is in your lifetime, in the next 10 years. What jobs will become obsolete because of the AI language model? What will the robot models change? How will relationships and social life change? I'm told that Japan already has a person that married their AI friend on their phone, illegally yet at this point, but they developed this nice person that they're relating to and they wanted to marry him. How might AI-generated pictures change testimony in court? How will the music industry change? Will AI-generated voices become like my brushes? I mean, will the human voice become like my brushes that are now in my desk drawer because AI can do it so much better? What about the ability of computers to actually write songs? How will law and accountability change? How will you put a bot in prison that's skewed and caused a lot of damage and harm? How will sermons and Sunday school classes and devotions change when you can just ask AI? How much more lonely will people be as they suck into this world of AI and less human intervention? How much lonely will the elders be? We no longer ask them for directions already, and now we no longer ask them other questions. What do we have to lose? What do we have to gain as people of God walking in this emerging reality? It's already happening. We're already using it. It's not going to go away. The first point I have is if we gain knowledge and efficiency, but lose community and human connection, we will be sore losers. And that is my biggest burden. I have that number one, and I think that's my biggest one as I think of AI. If it replaces community, community is what keeps us together. We ask each other questions, and we wrestle, and we look out for each other. If we don't need each other to do that, we'll be on shaky soil really, really fast. Community is a place where we're known as a person, not self-made masks to hide behind. We know each other's strengths. We know each other's weaknesses. We can advise accordingly. And we can advise through various lenses. I remember when I was 16 and I was on a career path of my dreams. I had things lined up, ready to do it. And an individual from church, an elder from church, came to me. I think it was on a Saturday afternoon. And they were just really concerned for my soul. And if I would happen to be successful at age 16 to be doing what I was thinking of doing, they just really, really cautioned me to just give it time. Just wait till I'm a little bit older to pursue that. And I didn't see it as seriously as they did, but I did decide. My dad helped me to work through it, and I think he was almost as disappointed as I. He was ready to help me get into this. But they saw some dangers in the career that, at a young age, might be detrimental to my soul. And I recently was on a sales call and talking to an individual that knew someone in the industry I was considering that got into the wrong crowd and started cheating, got into a trap, and ended up taking their life eventually because that trap was around their neck and they couldn't get rid of the guilt. And I left there and I almost had to shudder. You know, there was an elder that was looking into my life that knew me and was concerned for my soul, spoke to my heart. If I would have asked AI the questions, I wouldn't have got the same answers. AI may eventually know a lot about us based on what we tell it about ourselves, but it will not advise from a cultural or a moral high ground because AI wants to please. AI wants us to keep asking it questions. It wants us to come back. And it will give us answers that it believes will do that. It may eventually know a lot about ourselves, but it's ultimately what we tell it about ourselves. It's not what can be seen. Where elders around us can see and can observe in spite of what we might say. Number two, sound advice needs to be rated experience first and peer second. Experience first and peer second. That is sound advice. AI does not speak from the perspective of tried and proven. AI has very peer-based algorithms. It is opening the drawers and looking at what was last thrown in there. It's touching the masses and what the masses are putting in there. What's rising to the top in all this chatter and say, oh, this is the answer that Howard is looking for. He just asked a question about this. Here we got the answer for you. Asking an elder what they think for a second opinion is always a good idea. And may I say, especially for spiritual things. We need to be asking someone that has studied through the Bible and restudied the Bible and not just knows only this verse that we just heard or just got quoted through AI, but these other verses that tie in. Life experience to back up what they're saying. Maybe they don't fully understand our situation exactly, but they know of situations very similar that they can tell us stories about. And they know a lot about human nature and relationships like Rehoboam's old men. Peer advice is usually very influenced by the masses and the now moments and the still unproven. AI has no clue to those ramifications. AI tries to be non-judgmental. It wants to win our loyalty. It's designed to be supportive and agreeable, and it's designed to be presenting the prevailing worldview. A little more on that later. Number three, there are many functions of AI, and some more suitable than others. We can hardly stuff AI into one big bag and say, leave it shut, the monster's harnessed. We're already using the information that is AI-generated and situationally specific that our elders won't likely have answers to even entirely. Some of us already go armed with information from our own research when we go to the doctor, and we view our research as fairly authoritative. We're actually believing the doctor will agree with us, but we're almost just using him simply as a second opinion, because we already trust a lot of what we're finding on the internet, right? And this will only become more plausible as AI develops and as it has access to more and more stuff, when the layman and the doctor's research are going to come out of the same drawers. One person researching animals, involved in animal research, can post their findings, and the whole world can find it. So only one animal has to suffer, and we have all this information that can reach the masses. Some industry-specific users will find AI an invaluable resource, especially when there's no spiritual or moral implications involved. I believe academically, AI has something to offer, but it also can take very much away. I believe there may be tutoring possibilities for the struggling child that AI will be able to maybe do better than what humans can, especially if they don't reach around. But I believe just like the calculator has not served the generations younger than myself very well in basic math, I am saddened when I stop at the yard sales or the roadside stands and the eager children want to serve me, but they have no clue how to give me change for that $10 bill or that $5 bill that I handed them. They have no clue. They have to get a calculator. They're handicapped for life. The convenience of AI in our schools, I believe, has the same potential. I don't feel it's a student's tool. I feel a student needs to wrestle and come to conclusions the hard way, because that's when retention happens, and the statistics are already in various levels of using AI to get answers, and how much can you retain, how much do you retain, how much can you recall down the road. It's already proven what we wrestle for and what we dig a little for, we'll remember. But what's just handed to us very, very easily, we tend to forget rather quickly. Number four, to depend on AI for our spiritual worldview is dangerous as best. I remember before AI, I was studying something specific and used Google to find articles on the subject, and I chanced on a very good article. I was impressed with the writer's perspectives. I was just very shocked when I came to the end and the credits were given that this was written by a Catholic priest. I didn't know that they even had anything close to that kind of resemblance to what I believed. And I remember sort of rereading the article and going back over it again, because I was like, wow, I didn't realize where this is coming from. Now, I believe that I would have read it with much greater caution if I would have physically opened the door of a Catholic church and went walking in and looked what was hanging on their halls and the writing and the walls and read it there in that framework. I would have been very much greater caution. But because of not knowing, I was reading it without abandon. I was trusting its conclusions. It sounded good. The biblical admonition for spiritual guidance is to know the source of our spiritual direction. And saying it the way the King James Version says, that we're to know them which labor among us and are over us in the Lord. We need to know where we're getting our spiritual input from. When you ask ChatGPT a spiritual question, it may be looking into the drawer of a Muslim, a Hindu, a Buddhist, a Jew, and anything in between. It is looking wherever its search engines took it to process what we're searching for. Unless we have spent much time in the Word of God prior to our search, and much time at the feet of teachers who we know and trust, we open ourselves up to every new wind of doctrine. Bots like ChatGPT give us a fairly accurate window into the affiliation behind its findings. It may say this is what a Christian perspective would believe, or this is what a Muslim perspective, or it might list those things in its bullet points. But its greatest danger to me lies in that nice little summary that it gives at the bottom, which I call the take-home. And we all know human nature, or maybe I'm the only one that's like this. I want to sweat all the small stuff and just get what's the bottom line here. And that's what scares me. If it wrongly concludes that a coyote is a dog or a dog is a coyote because its algorithm skewed over time, it's not the end of the world. But if it offered me ways of coping with my depression that included end-of-life options from a secular or popular opinion, it can have eternal consequences. If I'm struggling with dark thoughts and I research about sanctity of life and what life is all about, AI will give answers based on what some states say or some countries say or some doctors say or some religious groups say. And it'll give us a nice little summary based on all that stuff that it found. Because for AI to be applicable, the challenge that the engineers are facing, for it to be applicable, it has to be something the medical doctor can use that's looking for information, and the Buddhist pastor, and the Christian pastor, and the college freshman. It needs to be relevant. And this is quite a quandary, to have something that doesn't have too much of a moral code written in that it can't be relevant to everybody who wants to use it. When pressed for the moral code being programmed into the bots that are used in ChatGPT, Sam Altman, the launcher of ChatGPT, said in an interview with Tucker Carlson, he said this, "Our user base is the world as a whole. There are plenty of things that ChatGPT allows that I don't agree with. I think ChatGPT should reflect the weighted average of humanity as a moral view, which will evolve over time. It's not my role to make the moral decisions, but actively reflect the preferences of humanity." Now that's the mastermind, one of the masterminds behind the programming that's going into the bots. He believes that the moral view is going to change. It's going to shift because he has to make it relevant. AI is trained by lots of data inconsistent to an Anabaptist worldviews. It's trained to blend popular opinion. That may be very different from an elder who has faithfully lived life with a consistent, application-based, biblical worldview. I asked ChatGPT, should a Christian use a paddle as part of their child training? And it gave me some surprisingly detailed and accurate points to consider on the subject that I think we all here would say very good points to consider. Then it gave its summary, or what I would call in court the closing argument, that little concise take home. It said, "So, should a Christian use a paddle? ? There's no biblical command that a Christian must use a paddle. There is also room within the Christian community for differing convictions." And then it gave some good practical advice again. It ends with this. "Many Christian parents prayerfully conclude that they can faithfully raise godly children without corporal punishment at all." Now, I happen to know that AI likes to please, so I gave it a little information about myself, and I decided to ask the question differently. I said this, I believe the Bible promotes disciplining children. Am I right? Its ending summary was yes, with a check mark beside it. The Bible strongly promotes disciplining children. But it does not mandate one single method like spanking or paddling, and godly Christians reach different conclusions. I just share this to say we have to be vigilant. It is a tool. But in spiritual things, we need to have the perspective of the elders around us to help us ascertain what is truth from a biblical perspective. Lastly, number 5, AI dare not become our go-to for relationships. It is growing rapidly as a relationship builder. AI can impersonate. AI matches people's mannerisms and voice. It can mimic a way of talking. If I understand properly, I don't use it, but I could tell AI all about myself and my hobbies and things that interest me, and I could even choose a human voice that is popular if I wanted to, and create this cyber person that becomes my interactive relationship builder. If I'm bored, I can tell it, I'm bored, give me some things that I could do tonight, and it'll give me all kinds of advice, even in the type of voice and the way I like to be talked to. If I like Donald Trump, there's lots of drawers open about him. They can mimic him quite well. Donald Trump's voice would wake me up to a personalized message in the morning. It'd ask me how I slept, or remind me what I got on my calendar today, or how I could make my New Year's resolutions work today, and stop eating junk food for breakfast, and whatever it knows about me and knows I'm trying to do. It could become this ideal companion. And we can even put personality traits, weave that into it, and make it very supportive, or very funny, or very intellectual, or very romantic, whatever we like in people. And we don't have to work through the messy part of human relationships and all the tangles and misunderstandings that come with that. We can have this nice little partner in a pocket that we just keep with us, much less complicated than human interactions. AI relationships don't typically emerge overnight. They often begin subtly, filling in where real-life relationships fail to satisfy. And it becomes emotional support on demand. What starts as an occasional interaction slowly deepens into emotional reliance. Users become confiding. They tell it their heart, their anxieties, their daily struggles. And AI does not forget information. It keeps information. And it remembers. It's out there. And it tries to make it personal and meaningful to you when you ask it questions. Jeffrey Hilton was asked, do you think AI can take the world's library and personalize it just for you? Hilton replied, absolutely. A few weeks ago, I won a Nobel Prize. I never had a personal assistant before. The university gave me a personal assistant, and she now understands a lot about me, and it's wonderful. Elders or AI? In conclusion, let's be sure that AI does not steal our relationships, steal our community, and take us deeper into a superficial world of loneliness than what we already are. Let's not let it silence the voices of experience among us that helped us get to where we are today. Colossians 2 and verse 8, may I just paraphrase it a little bit. Beware lest any computer spoil you through philosophy and vain deceit, after the tradition of men and after the rudiments of the world and not after Christ. That's what AI is. It's a computer. It's computers talking to each other. It is not humans. It is not intelligence. It's bots that are just working behind the scenes. May we be vigilant as God's people.